Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2 of For the Record Program number 482, an interview with Daniel Hopsicker. This is being recorded on October 21st of the year 2004. Before we return to our discussion with Daniel Hopsicker, let me remind you that all of the various lectures and programs I've done over the years are available from a CD duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E, and you can visit their website, equipped with real audio and featuring the most recently recorded pair of half-hour segments, at www.spitfirelist.com. Spitfirelist is one word. There are written, detailed, annotated article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs available in the For the Record section of the Spitfire website, which is also linked to two websites maintained by sister station WFMU that feature the For the Record shows on real audio. More recent programs are available at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery, one word, DaveEmory. Older programs are available for download only, also on Real Audio, on a longer URL linked to both the www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery website and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. On the Spitfire website, there is a page to click on to support the work that I'm doing. There also is a search function to help you locate items. There also is a link to a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that feature the declassified documents proving the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and most importantly, after World War II, when Prescott Bush Sr. was involved with institutions and individuals moving Nazi monies abroad out of Europe into neutral countries between 1945 and 1951, thereby proving Prescott Bush Sr.'s presence in the Bormann flight capital milieu. And the Bormann flight capital milieu is discussed in the really only substantive treatment of that, Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, by the late heroic Paul Manning. That book is available for download for free on the Spitfire website. There also is a synoptic account of some of the main points in the description for the Record 305, the main points of Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. And in the About Paul Manning section, there also is a biography of Paul Manning detailing not only his professional credentials, but also his tribulations while undergoing the search for his work on the Bormann Organization. And the Spitfire website is consummately important, and I can't encourage listeners strongly enough to utilize the materials on that website and to basically put the ball in play. And again, there is a page to click on for those of you who would like to support the work that I'm doing. And now we're going to go to the interview with Daniel Hopsicker. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to present Daniel Hopsicker, the author of the just-released and consummately important Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, published in hardcover by Mad Cow Press. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Hey, happy to be with you.
All righty. Now, as we've touched on in Side 1, the operation that you uncovered here, the operation through which many of the September 11th hijackers worked, was a protected organized crime and intelligence operation with links going all over the place. It is something that will ring very familiar to veteran listeners who have been with us through our discussions of the Iran-Contra affair, the drug and intelligence filigree that lies at the root of so much malfeasance. By the way, I should stress that Daniel is also the author of another book on this subject, Barry and the Boys, about Barry Seal, one of the main Iran-Contra players and somebody we spoke about at considerable length. Daniel, the sort of the godfather, at least up to a point, of the Magic Dutch Boys, Rudy Dekkers and Arne Krutoff, the people who ran the flying schools at which these hijackers enrolled. I won't say trained, because it looks like a lot of them were already trained. Wally Hilliard. Tell us about Wally Hilliard, some of his background, and some of the connections that this man had, because he had more than a switchboard.
No, he was a wildly successful insurance man from Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Was all anyone knew about him when he retired to Naples, Florida at the age of 65. Within 2 years, he had married a girl 40 years his junior and owned a fleet of 20 to 30 late model jets, most of which were flying to places where they weren't telling anyone where they were going and where they were coming from, some of which were bringing back drugs. So if you're going to go into retirement, you don't want you know the threat of you know having your Learjet seized, you know, ruining your hammock time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his cover. What he did in Wisconsin, you know, is kind of interesting. I'll tell you one interesting thing about him. He's a, you know, one of the big guys in Wisconsin. He was a major capitalist figure there. And yet, when my book was published, the first American newspaper to run a review was his local Green Bay newspaper. And they ran the review on the front cover of the paper. And when they called me to request a copy for review, I thought, oh, God, you know, his hometown paper. I'm like, you know, this is going to be terrible. No, no, no. The review was the review made you realize that suspicions about this guy did not begin with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, he's a very interesting fellow, and it looks like, again, the same immunity from all of the rules that apply to everybody about everything was conferred on Wally Hilliard. He could break any law, break any rule, violate every conceivable dictate of financial responsibility, and yet to do so with impunity.
I'm sure someone told you about the connection he's got all the way back to a banker in San Francisco who was in business with William Colby in the aftermath of the Nugent Hand thing.
No. Tell us about that.
I don't remember the guy's Myron somebody, and it's a, you know, I operate on a need-to-know basis, and I forget the whole story about it, but his insurance company was first made whole. I mean, he got rich when he sold his insurance company to a San Francisco subsidiary of American Express back in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy that helmed the company that bought him out was in business with William Colby in the aftermath of the Nugent Hand Bank CIA bank scandal in Australia in the 70s.
Yeah, and that also is a name well familiar to listeners, and their evidentiary tributaries from Nugent Hand running up through Harkin Energy and people connected with George Bush. More about Wally Hilliard. Wally Hilliard was into Learjets, Daniel. In your book, you write that it appears that one of his Learjets was used in some of the spiriting of Saudis out of the United States when nobody else could fly after 9/11.
Yeah, that was a story that was first reported in the Tampa Bay Tribune, then I picked it up and discovered that the only outfit in Southwest Florida that leases Learjets belongs to Hilliard, so it was likely his Learjet that flew out. But that's just an illustration of the special treatment that Saudis got. Okay, I mean, in fact, if you read, I found on the internet the ravings of Zacharias Moussaoui in his federal pleadings for himself, and in the midst of those ravings are some extremely interesting items. He, for instance, believes that he can prove that when he got pulled over in Norman, Oklahoma, you know, if he had been Muhammad Atta, he'd have been waved on through. When his name went to the National Crime Computer,
mm-hmm.
there'd have been something there that said, like, leave this guy alone.
Right, right.
Which, it appears, there likely was.
Oh, yeah. Well, again, we should stress that it appears that Deckers and Krutoff, basically, were working for Wally Hilliard, that he was the main man in these operations, so to speak. Daniel, in side one, you alluded to a bust of one of Wally Hilliard's Learjets. That was a fascinating story. I wonder if you'd tell us some of the details of that bust, the pilot, how the pilot behaved when DEA stuck machine guns in his face, and some of the previous travels of this particular...
Why don't I tell you how the pilot behaved when he found out I had printed his name in a column and then in my book?
Okay.
He offered to have me wiped out by the Venezuelan mafia. Well, I didn't know there was a Venezuelan mafia, but you know, yeah, he's an interesting character. The man that was piloting the Wally Hilliard's Learjet when it was busted by mistake. Basically, his day job was and probably still is as chief pilot for Venezuela's Air Force One.
Basically, their equivalent of their plane, which would fly, our plane that flies around the president. His name was Diego Levine Tejada, right?
That's correct.
And, again, when he got busted, he behaved in a very, very interesting fashion.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you get five DEA agents pointing machine guns at you, telling you to, like, get off your cell phone and you know, put your hands in the air.
Right.
And you very casually continue to talk on your cell phone, you know, you have a feeling that nothing bad can happen to you. And indeed, nothing bad happened to Mr. Levine, except I found his name, and you know, now he's known.
And he is threatening you.
Well, I mean, he did at one point.
He did at one point.
You know, and I asked someone to explain to him that you know, documents that were filed in court are public.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone can go in and read them.
Yep.
And actually, like, reprint, you know, certain portions. So there, you know, yeah. I mean, I'm the only reporter who came down here to look at who these guys were and what they were doing, you know. Why is that, you know? And here's something currently, okay? Here's why everyone out there should be, you know, buying the book if you ever want to. You should buy it now. Right now in Germany, my book I published in German,
mm-hmm.
and seven of Muhammad Atta's closest associates in the last year of his life were German.
Right.
You know, they weren't Arab, they were German. I got their names. I put them in my book, and one of them right now is threatening to sue my German publisher
mm-hmm.
for naming him in the book. And I'm telling this guy, I'm telling my German publisher that I've got, I mean, I'm sending him the proof.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, there is at least the threat that these people are now going to be able to go back and erase history.
Well, they may be able to do it in Germany. I don't know about here. And in particular, this interview is originating in California, Daniel. And California, at least until the Terminator changes things, has some of the very best slap suit law statutes in the entire world. And if something can be proven to be true, and you file, if you litigate in order to suppress it, you don't want to do that to anything originating from California because
it can
give you a lot of headaches.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've fought one lawsuit. I'm fighting one now. I'm currently being sued by Barry Seal's attorney, the former attorney to the biggest drug smuggling organization in American history.
Right.
Who went on to an illustrious, I hope you can hear the irony in my voice, career, financing various shady projects that Adnan Khashoggi had a hand in.
In a future interview, Daniel, I'd like to talk about some of the links between some of the same cast of characters and what you call the 9/11 Clown College, the disinformation effort that causes me. Well, it's good for my dentist because it causes me to grind down my molars. But let's angle back to Wally Hilliard. His Learjet, Diego Levine Tejada, gets busted. 43 pounds of heroin, largest heroin bust in Florida history, or at least recent Florida history. The DEA is sticking submachine guns in his face, telling him to get off his cell phone, and he basically is not in the least bit disturbed. That plane had made a whole bunch of other runs of a similar type, had it not?
30 weekly milk runs down and back to Venezuela.
And,
30 weekly milk runs. And the only reason, this is like the protected trade. The only reason the plane got busted, okay, I discovered, was that a low-level dealer in Orlando got busted by low-level DEA agents,
mm-hmm.
rolled on his supplier, and said, our next shipment's coming in. And
right.
So the DEA was waiting for the plane, okay?
Sure.
If the DEA agents had checked with their superior, in fact, the co-pilot on the plane was a DEA agent from Guyana named Mike Brassington. So it was a mix-up, Dave.
So this basically, it was simply by caprice that this protected operation was dealt with. Another point you make, Daniel, with regard to the flight schools, that there were some at which these guys could operate with impunity. And recapping for listeners that may have just tuned in, it appears that the September 11th hijackers were anything but novice pilots. Many of them had licenses to fly in other countries. These were experienced and very skillful pilots, which accounts for the high degree of skill that was was evident in the piloting of the kamikaze attacks, but that when they tried to, when some of these people enrolled in schools that weren't protected, right away the alarm bells went off.
Yeah, that's another big clue. Zacharias Moussaoui spent 3 months in Norman, Oklahoma, at a school that pilots, Bin Laden's pilots, terrorist pilots, had been training at that school for a decade. They turned away ADA for unknown reasons, but probably because they were already had too much visibility. People associated with the first World Trade Center bombing had learned to fly there. Osama bin Laden's personal pilot had learned to fly there. Moussaoui went there for 3 months and didn't raise an eyebrow, but transferred up to Minneapolis to a school with personnel not in on the joke, shall we say, or whatever.
Right.
And didn't make it through a morning before school personnel were insisting that the FBI do something. I mean, you know, and I'm sure they had to insist pretty hard because you know, you shouldn't say that because the FBI agents that intervened in turn pleaded with their superiors to allow them access to Moussaoui's computer files, which might have prevented September 11th.
Mm-hmm. We have maybe 10 minutes left here. Let's try to hit a few points really quickly here, Daniel. Wally Hilliard and Britannia Aviation. It looks like eventually the heat got too hot down in Venice, Florida, and things moved up to Lynchburg, Virginia. If you would tell us about Paul Martin, Britannia Aviation, the link to Huffman, and the good Reverend Jerry Falwell.
Jerry Falwell, okay. From the beginning, there were hints of right-wing Christian weird involvement, okay? Several of the pilots named as having trained Mohammed Atta, for instance, I discovered also flew regular missionary flights to the Caribbean and South America.
So they held missionary positions.
Yeah, yeah. It's part of Pat Robertson's Operation Blessing, for example.
Right.
All right? But I didn't get too far into that, and then this Britannia thing happened. Okay, but somebody once told me, a private investigator in Miami, said drugs are a movable feast. Okay, they don't have to always bring the drugs into me in Arkansas; they can move it to somewhere else. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So once a location has been exposed and is receiving scrutiny, like Venice and Naples were. You know, the thing to do is to move the operation. So what they did was they took two guys that were working at Huffman Aviation in Venice, Florida, made them a company which had no assets and no history. It was a paper dummy front company, and fixed it so they won a big aviation contract with the city of Lynchburg, Virginia, to run the city's general aviation facility,
okay,
at the airport, okay, and they beat out in bidding for this contract a company that was already at the airport that had 45 employees and you know, in a multi-million dollar bank account, and those people said, who are these guys? They did a search on Britannia Aviation on the web, and they found that that they were referred to in only one article, which was by me. So they called me. So that's when I discovered that they were moving part of the operation in Lynchburg, Virginia, and it didn't make sense. Lynchburg's home of Jerry Falwell, and then I met and interviewed Wally Hilliard's former accountant, who told me that Wally had loaned Jerry Falwell, back in 94, $1 million that the Reverend Falwell had not felt the need to repay.
Well, praise the Lord.
Well, I mean, that's not very Christian, is it? So when this accountant, who was an interesting guy all by himself, began working for Wally Hilliard, one of the jobs Hilliard gave him was to attempt to recover some of the money from the Reverend Falwell.
Mm-hmm.
And this man called the Reverend Falwell's accountant,
mm-hmm.
who told him, there's no problem, okay? We can pay back the money. I can pay back the money. But you have to work with me on this because anytime there's any money left in the account at the end of the month, Jerry strips it out.
Well, again, praise the Lord.
Right. So they were going to be pay back the money, like, you know, in camouflaged installments. I can't remember how he was doing it, but, you know, that was just a great great little anecdote. I mean, the Jerry Falwell's accountant was saying, we can pay back this loan, but I got to do it this way because if I leave any money in the account at the end of the month, the Reverend Falwell strips it out.
Maybe that's what was known by as consubstantiation in Christian theology. Daniel, real quickly, because we're getting down to the last few minutes of our talk here. We've got about 6 minutes. Let's talk on some points. Now, again, you note that an awful lot of Mohammed Atta's associates in Florida were from Germany, that basically a lot of these people appear to have moved over with Atta from the other side of the pond, but they weren't Arabs at all. I wonder, real quickly, flesh that out for us.
Well, half dozen of them were German and Swiss, and these were people with whom Atta attended meetings, from which they came back glum, okay?
Uh-huh.
As if they had attended a meeting at which the imminent death of a few of them had been discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And these were people that Atta called my brother, and according to eyewitnesses, Atta did not refer to. He didn't refer to all Arabs as my brother,
mm-hmm.
So it was an honorific, only certain people. So whether that meant Muslim Brotherhood or, you know, is beyond me, above my pay grade, but these were people who had known Atta in Hamburg, in Germany. These were long-term associates of Atta. None of them have been questioned. None of their names has come out except in my book, and one of them is now threatening to sue my German publisher to get his name removed, and whether he'll be successful or not has nothing to do really with me. It has to do with how much my German publisher values the truth, you know, and preserving some of this until such time as people can do something about it, or even, like, you know, go back and puzzle out what happened in 50 years.
Well, I think that a lot of this will fit very comfortably into some of the scenarios that I've made available to my listeners in the volume of broadcasts I've done about September 11th. Well, let's touch on some of the other points in your book real quickly, Daniel, because we're almost out of time. Tell us about the Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft, which appears to have sponsored Mohammed Atta.
Well, we just found out. I mean, on my website, I just published a story last week. About something I discovered in a 3-year anniversary story about Atta, in which it was revealed that he had loaned, without much care, $25,000 to a Turkish man to start a bakery while he lived in Hamburg in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Where does a penniless grad student get $25,000 to pass out without even receiving a promissory note? The whole story is flaky, but...
Okay.
You know, and that's the way it is.
Carl Duisberg Gesellschaft was actually part of the Congress Bundestag program. It was a fellowship that actually sponsored Mohammed Atta. You note that his German sponsors, however, had their names left out of the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other story. I mean, some German couple brought him to Germany, and he lived there for 6 months. And when newspapers write stories about him, they leave the names out. Were as if we're not allowed to know who these two people were or who they were working for when they went down to Cairo and recruited Mohammed Atta to come back and live with them in Germany.
Yeah. And Carl Duisberg, by the way, was a key official with IG Farben, the German chemical cartel. He was actually one of the architects of the forced labor program that the Germans used in World War I. So I know they talk about how they're going to advance the professional possibilities of their fellows. Interesting group.
It's obvious spook stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What it ultimately means is perhaps beyond me. But, I mean, clearly when you bump across this, you realize... you aren't dealing with people who are who they pretend to be. You're not in Kansas anymore. So, I urge all your listeners, who probably are some of the best informed people in the country, to order a book off my website, or order the new version of Mohammed Atta and the Venice Flying Circus, which has got 10 to 15 minutes of an interview. The interview I did with Mohammed Atta's American girlfriend. You can hear her tell the story in very matter-of-fact terms of who he was and on what she knew of him during their 2 months together.
Real quick, we're going to get to the ordering information in a second. It appears that the Magic Dutch boys have been the focal point of attempts on their lives.
Two.
Yeah. Can you real quickly tell us about that? Actually, you know what? I'll sum it up.
Actually, it's not a real quick story.
It isn't. I'll encapsulate it, and then we'll get to the ordering information. Rudy Deckers was in a plane. He was in a helicopter. He told a fellow whose name I forget to fly alongside of him because he apparently knew that he might be in some problems. I guess Wally Hilliard wanted to fire him or get some money back. And then Arne Krutoff crashed in a plane, and all of a sudden the wreckage was impounded and compacted before it could be inspected by the FAA. Those are among the very interesting pieces my engineer is making. He just arched his eyebrows at that one.
Yeah.
This is among the information that you can peruse in the book, Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 911 cover-up in Florida, and other videos and product available from Mad Cow Productions. Tell us about that, Daniel. How can they order it?
The website's madcowprod.com or madcowmorningnews.com. The phone number is 800-556-2012. 800-556-2012. It's me and a hippie buddy of mine in Oregon who handles fulfillment. We have no money from cults behind us. We have no. I love that commercial of yours I heard. No money from foundations. That's very droll and very true. And when you don't have money like that, you have no money. You can do a book of investigative journalism like I have, which thank you for praising, should be brought to the attention of the American public and not be able to do it.
All right, Daniel, let's visit again in the future, and we'll go into some of these subjects in greater detail.
Pleasure make your acquaintance. Enjoyed talking to you, Dave.
All righty. Once again, the consummately important book by Daniel Hopsicker, Welcome to Terrorland, Mohammed Atta and the 9/11 Cover-Up in Florida, is available. You can order that from his website, www.madcowprod.com. There are also videos available, plus some very important articles by Daniel Hopsicker pointing to very, very firm links between the very elements that were behind the September 11th horrors and the so-called 9/11 truth movement. And you'll hear some very, very disturbing connections as well. It's one of the reasons why the Nazi connections have not been discussed at all, and also one of the reasons why the so-called 9/11 truth movement has not really focused on the Saudi connections at all. That is not an accident. All of the various programs I've done over the years are available from a CD duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, Spitfire. You can reach them by regular mail at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, 95005, or by email at mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. Spitfire website equipped with detailed annotated descriptions of the various programs I've done over detailed annotated article length descriptions of the For the Record shows, descriptions of the other programs and lectures, a search function, a link to a website maintained by listeners in the Midwest that features the actual declassified U.S. government documents proving the Bush family's involvement with Nazi industry before, during, and after World War II, and also the book Martin Bormann, A Nazi in Exile, and links to two websites maintained by the heroic sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey. More recent For the Record programs streaming at www.wfmu.org/Dave Emery. Older shows available for download only at a longer URL. Link to both that address and to the For the Record section of the Spitfire website as well. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 482, an interview with Daniel Hopsicker being recorded on October 21st of the year 2004. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.